The newscast is produced by Monica Lopez and Simba Russo. Headlines editors are Randy Zimmerman and Nell Abram. DC editor is Mitch Jezerich. Our technical production team is Jay Paget-Seekins, Pauline Bartolone, Mick Millen, and Eric Klein. Special thanks to Transbay for web services.
And this is radio station WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. It's time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour or so. As we join you on this, at the time this program is being presented to you, it's an historic day. And perhaps whenever you listen to it, it'll be historical in some other sense as well. But this is the day in the year 2005 that we received a new pope. Is that the right way to say it? We got a new pope? There's a new pope in the world. Yeah, Pope Benedict. We have a dormitory here on campus called Benedict. I don't know if that's going to affect it at all. We used to have a saloon. We used to have the Benedict Saloon. Boy, there used to be bars on campus, and drinking was rampant. People smoked pot in the corridors. The professors did. I'm just getting off on a wild tangent here. But boy, things sure have changed. I don't think Pope Benedict's going to be reversing any of that either. But, Pope Benedict the 16th, that's the new guy in the job now. So, you have complaints about the Catholic religion, that's the guy to bring them to. And, you know, it sure was confusing. I don't know if people were watching this, but on television, they every channel, every news channel had a little corner of their screen with a picture of a chimney. It was the most ridiculous thing ever. About as ridiculous as the color coding for how dangerous life is these days. But there's a chimney, and we're supposed to be watching the chimney, waiting for smoke to come out. And the way it works, smoke is a different color, depending on whether or not they elect a pope or they disagree. So the idea is when they disagree, they put some sort of chemical into the ballots that makes it burn black. They burn the ballots, and then they make the smoke black. Now, if they elect a pope, then the smoke is white. And that's what we saw. But it was very confusing, because yesterday, Monday, when this happened for the first time, the smoke came out, and it was white. The smoke was most definitely white. And then it turned black. So either it means they just elected somebody, and then they immediately had him killed, or the chemicals didn't quite work right. So, you know, right away you have this confusion, and I feel what better way to parallel the whole Catholic religion. And I'm not putting down Catholics, but, you know, they're in the limelight today, so they're also in the crosshairs today. But, you know, that's all this confusion in Rome and throughout the world. Wow, they elected a pope. No, they didn't. What does it mean? Why can't they get the smoke to be the right color? I mean, how hard is it, really? And why? Why must we do it this way, you know? Maybe we could do it like C-SPAN, where there's a voice vote and a little electronic tally on the side of the screen. Would it really hurt things that much? You know, they're not speaking Latin anymore, you know, in many places. So if they can kill an entire language, then maybe they can kill the chimney as well. No, it's fun. It's fun. And the good thing about electing a pope who's 78 years old is that we're going to get to do it again pretty soon. So don't mean to be nasty, but I mean, it's true. He's the oldest pope to be elected in, I think, over 300 years. Yeah, so that's certainly going to result in this happening again. When Pope John Paul II was elected, I think he was, what was he? He was 84 when he died, and he was elected in the late 70s. So he was in his 50s. You know, the guy was in his 50s. So this guy is 20 years, at least 20 years older than that at the outset. Pope John Paul's reign was something like 25 years, which is one of the longest reigns ever. So, you know, at most, this guy's got about 5 years. So, we get to do it again, and maybe we'll get someone a little more progressive in the office. Because this guy definitely is not progressive. Not by any stretch of the imagination. Very conservative. In fact, he was a Nazi. Well, you know, I know saying that is going to offend people. And it should offend people, because anything having to do with Nazism should offend people. But, you know, I'm saying it because it's true, and I'm saying it because I like to say things that are true. The current Pope was a Nazi. It's true. He was. He was part of the Hitler Youth. The current Pope, Pope Benedict XVI, was a member of the Hitler Youth. Go on, say it yourself. He was a member of the Hitler Youth. It's a fact. Now, does that mean he can't be Pope? Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, you know, many aspects of the Catholic Church, you know, kind of embraced what was going on in that era, but that doesn't mean that he was one of those people. It could mean all kinds of things. Everybody in Germany back in the 40s was caught up in the insanity. But it's very easy also to look back on that period and say, well, you know, I opposed it from the start. Are there any actions to back that up? That would be something to look at. It's hard to judge people based on how they react in a time of crisis, but I also don't know what the options were for people who were not Jewish to not be part of the Hitler Youth. May have been that or death, I don't know. I wasn't there. I just think it's very interesting that this is the first pope ever, probably the last one ever, that was part of the Hitler Youth. And I'm going to keep saying it because it's true. And some Israeli Jews have expressed concern that the new pope was a member of the Hitler Youth as a teenager in Germany. But many say his record over the last 60 years is more important than any organization he was forced to join in 1945? It's kind of late in the game, isn't it, to be joining the Hitler Youth? Well, let's see, it's 2005 now, right? Right? Okay. 2005, so that's 60 years ago. The guy's 78 now. That makes him 18. All right, you know, the way they were presenting this on television before, it was like he was a little child. He was like 8 or 9. He was joining the Hitler Youth. This is different. 18 years old. You're old enough to really know how to hate them. You're old enough to join the army and kill people. And plus, 1945 is pretty late in the game, you know? 18 years old, you should know which side is winning, and, I don't know. It's troubling, to say the least. Anyway, Israel's foreign minister says he's sure the new pope opposes anti-Semitism in all its forms. It's kind of a softball statement to make, but yeah, I guess so. Why not? And of course, it's always fun to look at the words about somebody when they've been elected to a position like this before the internet gets overrun with all the articles about the Pope. So I did a quick look for Joseph Ratzinger, which is his name, and found the following story, which actually was dated yesterday. A leading liberal cardinal made a thinly veiled assault on the conservative front-runner, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, on the eve of one of the most critical papal elections in history. I wonder why it's critical. Why is this one particularly critical? Anyway, as the cardinals prepared to determine the church's future direction with their choice of a new pope, Cardinal Walter Kasper, himself an outside candidate for the post, warned against choosing a clone of John Paul II. Progressive cardinals have been attempting to counter conservatives who back Cardinal Ratzinger because he will ensure doctrinal continuity with John Paul II. While they lack a clear candidate themselves, the progressives are pressing for a compromise figure from Europe or Latin America who might relax what they see as the tight grip exerted by the Vatican over local bishops. Let's not search for someone who is too scared of doubt and secularity in the modern world. Oh, and this is great, too. You got to hear this. Cardinal Ratzinger is thought by many to lack pastoral skills and has earned the nickname God's Rottweiler. I kid you not. It's from London's News Telegraph. And there's another pretty good quote here from... what paper is this? It's actually from the BBC. Personally charming, quick-witted, and fluent in four languages. I heard 10 before. It's down to 4 now? All right, well, this was an old story, so maybe it went up to 10 after this. Fluent in 4 languages, the new pope is a convincing orator. Jesuit Father Thomas Rees calls him a delightful dialogue partner, but adds that most of the pope's fellow clergy would be too worried about the prospect of excommunication to enjoy talking to him. Sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it? So, that's what we have to look forward to. Pope Benedict the 16th. It's a cool name, I'll say that. Hey, did you hear what Benedict said today? I think it's kind of neat. You know, they should do the same thing with presidents, where you pick a name. You know? Not George W. Bush, but like Conan or something. I don't know. Just whatever name strikes you. And that says something about your personality, who you believe in. All right, so that's the big news. That's probably going to be with us for quite some time. And hopefully that means that we won't be fixated on the Vatican for the next few weeks at least. What else should we be talking about? Well, there's all kinds of things. First of all, I want to thank everybody who called in last week. Last week was the WUSB fundraiser, and we performed better than we have ever performed before, which is really good, considering that the fundraiser technically was 4 weeks, and we didn't really get to, for various reasons, we didn't really get to seriously ask for help until last Tuesday. And when we did that, our listeners really came through. We raised over $2,000 in a single hour at this station. I don't know if that's a station record, but it's pretty impressive regardless. And fool that I was, and you may have heard this, at the beginning of the hour I did say that I would match whatever came in during that hour. Yeah, it must rank up there with one of the most monumental stupid things to say ever, but I said it, and I can't back away from it, so that means that we raised over $4,000 for the hour. What I'm going to try to do as sort of a special thanks to the listeners here is try and work it out so that the $2,000 that I'll be donating can go towards a brand new delay machine for the station. And that will enable us to take phone calls once again. And, you know, a nice sounding delay system, not one that sounds awful. And I think that should just about cover the cost, which is amazing. It basically shows how listeners can get together and fix a problem. Now, there's many problems left, many things that we have to fix still, many problems that will be facing us, but we will be all the stronger because of the support of those of you out there. And again, thanks so much for making the marathon here such a success and for making this program a real success. You know, a lot of people write in and say that the words they hear, whether they make them angry or whether they make them not in agreement or run around screaming in frustration, it's somehow a relief just to hear the words being spoken and to know that there's something they can participate in and exchange dialogue and things that aren't talked about in other places. Well, it goes both ways, because knowing that you're out there and supporting the place makes it worthwhile, makes it worth doing. It's very easy to get frustrated, think nobody's out there, think nobody cares. That's what they want. They want you to feel isolated. And that's how things like the FCC come to be, where people are restricted in all kinds of horrible ways kept from doing creative things. We have to fight back, and we will. We will, because we've been getting a steady stream of letters to our email address. Our goal was 100 letters, and we're practically there. I haven't really counted, but we're practically there. I'd say we're probably within 20 of it. So if another 20 people write in the address otw@2600.com and say that, yes, I oppose what the FCC has been doing to broadcasting, and I am willing to fight to do whatever it takes. Well, that's not Al-Qaeda, so don't worry. You know, we're not going to send you into a suicide mission or anything like that, but we are going to be thinking about ways to fight this and ways to take back the airwaves for people that can appreciate them, not people who want to control what other people listen to and watch on television. Really some dark ages that we're facing. But we have a beacon of light here. So I'd like to read some of the letters and maybe go into a couple of other things as well. Again, our address, otw@2600.com. Hello, Emmanuel. My name is Paulo. I'm from Portugal in Lisbon, where I was, actually, not too long ago. Beautiful city. I usually listen to the program when it's already off the air the next day, courtesy of the download section of 2600. I just wanted to congratulate you. The show is great. It's a pity that most people don't often realize how important it is to continue to have such shows like this on the air. Just a question. What is going on over there? Every time I listen to the program, it looks as though you guys have lost another basic right. Now it seems the right of free expression is on the line. You wanted 100 emails? Let's see how many you get. Count this one in. And thanks very much for the great work you're accomplishing. And just keep doing it. Thanks, Paula, for that nice letter. And, you know, I should point out, a lot of our mail that has come in has been coming in from foreign countries. Now, does that mean that you're invalidated from fighting the FCC? Not really. I mean, you're not obviously a listener to the airwaves, but you are a listener on the Internet, and the FCC wants to take over that particular form of listening as well, and satellites, and cable, and everything. Whether it's through the Digital Millennium Copyright Act or the latest conservative group of parents, the Parents Television Council, whatever those lunatics are, they want to control what is presented, and the audience is a worldwide audience, so it does affect you. However, obviously you can vote for people that that can change things, but we can certainly use help wherever it comes from. All right, I heard your message on Off the Wall about writing in, and here's the result. While I may not agree with all of your views, I certainly accept and agree that you should have the fundamental right to express them. Well, no one's ever said I can't express my views, so I want to make that clear. But part of creative expression is doing some of the things that we do. It's allowing you to talk, for one thing, and not having a delay system means that we have to be afraid of that $500,000 fine that the FCC would impose on us for simply a single syllable word that could slip out over the airwaves and traumatize somebody somewhere. We have to worry about strict interpretation of every rule the FCC makes, some of which are pretty nonsensical, which would have us getting permission from a phone operator before we could talk to her on the air to get a phone number or to get some bit of information or to demonstrate a service or even to talk to a voicemail interactive system. It's insane. It's completely insane. Continuing with this letter, your show is certainly one of the more thought-provoking shows out there, and there is nothing I like better than a debate about something that matters. And that's signed John. John, thank you very much for that letter. You wrote in from Northern Ireland. This person from Chicago writes in, I probably don't count because I'm unmarried and without children, but basically the FCC is killing radio as we know it. The few dunderheads that... Can I say that word? All right, they're nodding. I can. All right. For now, I can say that word. How does a word become a word you can't say? Or has this list always existed? Like, if I have a word that I want to use, okay, and I want it to be as vile and as obscene as possible, how do I get that kind of recognition for my word? Because I have some words. I have some words that even sound really good. No matter what language you're speaking, they just have that sound to it that's like, oh my God, that's bad. You know, that's obscene. That's horrible. Cover your ears. Maybe even your eyes. But I'd like to know, you know, what is the etymology of these words? How do they become so offensive? The words that everybody knows. I honestly think, you know, if people lightened up on this a little bit, it wouldn't be, you know, a curse fest everywhere. The words would cease to have the offensive meaning. You might hear them, yeah. You know, you hear them everywhere. And there's such a thing as good programming. There's such a thing as wanting to be able to express yourself clearly and intelligently. It's why we don't use bad grammar. Imagine if bad grammar was fined. Oh, you know, I would like that, actually. Yeah, if people talking who could not string a sentence together because they never bothered to even try to learn the proper way to express themselves in their native language, $500,000 fine for, like, saying ain't or something. I know, that's a bad example because that's kind of a cool word to use. But there's all kinds. You know, misusing you and I, for instance. Boy, that gets me. Or putting an apostrophe on its when it's the possessive sense, you know. Things like that really get my goat. And that, to me, is a lot more offensive than someone saying something else that we all know what we're talking about. That's why we don't use bad grammar, because it sounds bad. Because it sounds stupid. It doesn't get your point across, unless your point is that bad grammar is stupid and you're demonstrating it. So, yeah, same reason we would not use bad language, because it wouldn't work. But if it did slip over in a song, or while covering a news story, or through an uninformed listener, who would probably be cut off right after saying that, where's the harm? Okay, continuing with this letter, which I really took a long detour from. The few dunderheads that brought all the FCC ire have or are in the process of moving on to podcasting and satellite radio. And sadly, community radio is left holding the bag with its ears pinned back. On a more positive note, I'm really looking forward to the On the Road upcoming segments. I hope it has some of the lighter aspects found in Freedom Downtime, signed Will. And thank you, Will. What you're referring to, of course, is the trip I'll be taking later this year, starting in July, heading overseas by boat, over Europe and Asia by train, stopping at a hacker conference along the way, and making my way by boat again over the Pacific Ocean, and then taking a train back here, around the world without leaving the ground, or at least not too high. I might jump up a bit or go up high in a building or something like that, but I won't be flying in airplanes or helicopters or balloons. And yeah, while that's happening, I'll be recording shows and using internet technology and maybe satellite phones or whatever I can find to get the show here. So you don't have to panic. You'll be able to hear the show. It just will be coming from a strange place. You know, it's funny. I saw it's the Queen Mary 2 I'm going to try to get on, if I can find a fare that's something short of ransom. But I saw that boat leave the other day. It was a week ago Sunday, actually, I saw it leave. And parked next to that boat was this other ocean liner, which was also leaving later that day. That turned out to be the same one that got hit by the 10-story wave the other day and limped back into New York. So, wow, you know, it's something to look forward to, the unpredictability of the high seas. So, on the road, on off the wall. Should be fun. Dear Emmanuel, I'm writing in response to your challenge to get 100 emails from people wanting to help. I think the recent actions and overall attitude of the FCC are inexcusable. When a radio station is so afraid of incurring their wrath that they employ self-censorship policies, something must be changed. Currently, I'm living in Indiana, so there's not much I can do locally. But I would like to give my support. And on a side note, thank you very much for putting out an excellent conference last July, referring to the Fifth Hope. It was the first hacker convention I had ever been to, and the first convention ever I had been to. It was also my first time in New York, and I had a lot of fun. Thanks again. Signed, Phil. Thank you, Phil, and thanks for coming to the conference. A lot of people did have fun. I realize New York is not the way it's portrayed in so many places. And, you know, I'm sure there are enclaves in Indiana, oases that you can find. I know there are in cities like Bloomington and Indianapolis and South Bend, places like that. And also, you know, even in small communities, there are people who have clues. There are people who are open-minded. One of my favorite expeditions of the year is going out to Ohio for the Dayton Hamvention. That takes place second to last weekend in May. We drive the 2600 van across the Midwest. And it's just so much fun because I really do like the Midwest. I like the people of the Midwest. And you can have dialogues. A lot of people think that because you come from a different part of the country or you may have different political or ideological or religious views that you somehow can't connect. It's not true. You can. You can connect completely. And it's good to not always be in the same environment. But on that subject, yeah, there are a lot of weird and wacky things going on in places like Indiana. Actually, I think I have one. Do I have an actual example of this? Thought I did. Give me 1 second to get a little organized here. No, that's not it. Could be at the end of this. Okay, I don't have it. I thought I had it. Oh, is it over here? There it is. I'm sorry. So many papers, you know? It's a good thing there's no cameras in here. Yes, Indiana businesses have been told to hide nude statues. The Venus de Milo had better wear a top, and Michelangelo's David should put on some pants if they're going to be seen at a yard art business. Bartholomew County officials told the business near Interstate 65 that it must move cement copies of the classical statues and about 10 others out of public view because they are obscene under Indiana law. Obscene. Michelangelo's David is obscene. It's not fair to point out our business, and personally I don't find them offensive, said Ginger Strivo, a co-owner of White River Truck Repair and Yard Art. Just the fact that a place can exist called White River Truck Repair and Yard Art makes Indiana cool. But laws like this, this kind of stupidity, boy, it just really makes you want to do something. Anyway, Frank Butler, the county's zoning inspector, disagreed. They have nudity, and that should not be in the view of a minor, he said. Yeah, because minors have to be protected from nudity. Because nudity, to a minor, is the same thing as obscenity. You know, it's only to people, idiots like this, the county zoning inspector, who view nudity the same way as they view obscenity or pornography. You have to wonder what's going on inside their minds, you know, what kind of unexplored deviant behavior there might be lurking in there. Nudity is the same as obscenity. Not being the view of a minor. Anyway, Indiana's obscenity law prohibits the display of nudity where children might see it. Boy, you know, there's just so much you can do with that. I guess kids can't go to any museum. I guess kids can't look at statues or art books. Is it only human nudity, or are they worried about animals too now? It's only one step away. The law also stipulates that such material is harmful for minors if, considered as a whole, it lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value for minors. How dare they? How dare they say minors have a different level of taste than regular people? Because you're a minor, this lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value because you're not capable of understanding it. And it sounds very similar to the FCC's definition of obscenity and indecency. Almost word for word. So the same mentality is behind both. So yeah, okay, Indiana's not exactly a bastion of Renaissance thinking, but it could be a stage for a good battle. You can't let these things just go unremarked. What else do we have here? Hi, Emmanuel, I'm only 16, and I've listened... No, stay out of Indiana if you're only 16. I've listened to your show for about a year now. I am just as fed up with the way the country and the world, for that matter, is running. I would be completely willing to do anything I can in order to help in taking this small step to stand up to the FCC for all the crap that they've been doing lately. It's funny, if there was an FCC at my high school, everyone would have received at least $500,000 fine by now. I'm sure everyone's parents would be a little less reluctant to buy their little princess or whatever a new car or cell phone for every breath they take. Okay. Very interesting. On another note, I get a lot of flack for carrying my backpack around the school with all the school shootings as of late. Once again, another case of the wrong people cracking down on the wrong things. If only such an effort would be put towards the fight against drugs or something, but a backpack? I'm sure my parents' tax dollars could be well spent in other places. Such parallels of stupidity are not only confined to the FCC's case, as you see, it trickles down everywhere in society. Keep up the good work and spread the word. One voice is louder than millions of silent ones. Oh, that's good. You say that? Fine, Josh. Josh, that's a great quote, wherever it came from. And let's see what else we have here. Hi, Emmanuel. I'm listening to Off the Wall on my iPod on Wednesday. I heard you want some responses to the American FCC crackdown on indecency. Here's my contribution. When the Janet Jackson incident happened last year, I found it very amusing seeing the response from some religious and political leaders in your country. Soon it became apparent that changes were going to be made. As a huge Howard Stern fan, I took part in the letter-writing campaign complaining to the FCC about the double standard in American broadcasting post-Janet Jackson. Yes, I'm a Stern fan and an off-the-wall, off-the-hook fan as well. In Finland, where I live, I hear cursing and foul language on the radio every day, around the clock, and in all different languages. And no, we don't have lunatics running around the streets killing people. The lunatic killers are just a small percentage of the population, and those are taken care of by the rest of us and our automatic weapons. All kidding aside, my feelings about this and other American issues, such as the war, since Bush came to power, has gone from humorous to anger to frustration, and just recently, after the circus you called an election, just not giving a crap. I know that may sound cruel, but that is a luxury choice many of us have living outside U.S. borders. From a foreign point of view, it is just so frighteningly fascinating seeing it happen in front of your very eyes. You don't have to be a foreigner to have that sensation. I have it every day. Witnessing the changes from a once somewhat free society turning into one of the most restrictive and doing it at such a fast pace. What is also frightening is seeing so many Americans not standing up for their rights, except a few people, including you, Emmanuel. Ah, gosh. Now, I just look to the U.S. as an interesting social experiment. I can't wait to see what happens next. Guess I just have to tune in and see. Signed, Kai from Finland. Kai also is the person who translated Freedom Downtime into Finnish. Hasn't found any Easter eggs. Well, Kai, you're not looking. They're there, and we have a contest. All kinds of nice things go to the person that finds the most of them by September 1st, I think. All the details are on our website, www.2600.com. And some interesting things that Kai touched upon, as far as just seeing how the society changes and watching it with sort of this detached fascination. You know, I've mentioned the TV program 24 a couple of times, and I got to tell you, it just gets more and more bizarre and ridiculous with every passing week. But I think it also shows where our society is heading and the values that are being passed on to us by those people in power. When that program started a few years ago, 4 years ago or so, it wasn't nearly as strident as it is now as far as handing out torture to anybody who is even considered to be a suspect. Last night, though, was the epitome. They had captured a suspect, not a terrorist himself, but somebody who was helping the terrorists, or so they believed. This person had no criminal record. This person had no history of any sort. But they knew he was behind something. So what happens when they catch him? The head terrorist, the Osama bin Laden of their particular universe, calls up this organization known as Amnesty Global. Amnesty Global. Not Amnesty International. They can't say that, but they said the next closest thing. And they had Amnesty Global actually step in to the secret governmental offices that nobody can get into and prevent this guy from being tortured. And they did it within 10 minutes, too, in the middle of the night. Yeah, this show has all kinds of bizarre concepts. It's supposed to be taking place in real time. But people wind up cross town in Los Angeles in 3 minutes by car. And you know that just does not happen. So the well-meaning but misguided lawyer from Amnesty Global stepped in to the counterterrorist organization and prevented them from doing their job by torturing this guy. And, you know, looking at the way it was presented, you realize, boy, this guy is such a jerk. He's going to make millions of people die because he won't let these poor agents do their job. You know, and there's no questioning whatsoever. There was no, well, could we be wrong? Are we doing it the wrong way? One of the best quotes was basically an exchange between one of the agents and the lawyer, saying that these are unusual circumstances and constitutional protections do not apply at this particular juncture. Whereas the lawyer responded, quite rightly, I thought, that the Constitution itself was made in a time of turmoil, and it should be relied upon in all times. To which the response was, well, I hope you can live with that. Implying that this idiot is going to be responsible for the guy getting away and killing or helping to kill millions of people. Now, they did manage to duck the issue, because I don't think that's going to happen. What they did, I guess, was ingenious, and from a law enforcement point of view, they let the guy go. They just let him go. And then one of their agents resigned and grabbed him, held a gun to his head and started breaking his fingers until he started talking. So, yeah, they didn't have to blame the Amnesty Global guy for massacring Americans. But they got to torture. They got to torture the suspect anyway. And torture was the right way to go. And that message has been presented on that program time and time again. Those things do influence people. They influence the way people think. Can you imagine if you know, watching Adam 12 or something, or a Dragnet, if Officer Friday went in and just, you know, stabbed somebody, or broke their fingers, or injected them with all kinds of horrible drugs, which they do virtually every week on 24, and probably on other programs too, I don't get to see all of them, people would be outraged. But it's the same thing that you see in every other aspect of society, where changes occur slowly. And in the weirdest places. Yeah, I know, people say, don't watch stupid television programs. And you're right, people shouldn't watch stupid television programs. I think this one is kind of fascinating, by just watching the way things unfold. And also tearing it apart. I enjoy tearing things apart. I think if you ignore all the things that are bad, the bad things will overwhelm you in the end. Or at least overwhelm the vast majority of people. So when something like this happens, someone should be there to say, wow, you know, that's really stupid. You're really doing a disservice here and painting people in a very negative light and making people think that horrible things like torture are acceptable. Now, would I say shut them down? They don't have the right to say it? Absolutely not. But I think that's a whole lot more offensive than a single-syllable word that the FCC might not like. Let the viewers decide. Let the advertisers decide. Let the market dictate terms. Not a bunch of conservative old guys in Washington, D.C. Oh, you know, there are just so many things wrong with that program, though. I could spend hours just talking about it. So far this year, they've crashed a train, stolen this amazing device that somehow is able to override every single nuclear power plant in the country, making them all move towards meltdown. One nuclear plant actually did meltdown, resulting in the deaths of thousands of people. There's been gunfights everywhere. There was a clash between federal agents and corporate security trying to cover up their tracks. The Secretary of Defense was kidnapped and tortured, along with his daughter. More people killed there. But the real turning point of the program came when a stealth bomber was stolen and Air Force One was targeted. And the funny thing about that was, all of the things that had happened in this single day, because that's the premise of the program, is that it all takes place in one day, hence the title 24. You know, you've had a train crash, you've had evacuations all over the country, you've had thousands of people killed in a nuclear disaster. You've had terrorists on the run. You don't know what they're going to do next. But the thing that everybody is all, oh my God, about is the fact that the president's life is in danger. I mean, come on. I don't understand. I don't understand that whole mentality. It's kind of like a throwback to the days of monarchy. All right, so the president's life is in danger. Big deal. You know what? We're all in danger. You lose the president, guess what? There's a vice president. We'll survive. Okay, I just realized who we'd get if we lost our president, and now I'm scared. Okay, fine. It can be scary, but it's a lot worse when thousands of people are killed. You know, that should be the big oh my God story, not the fact that the president's plane is going to be targeted. The fact that thousands of people just died, you know, that's, I think that says something right there as well. It says something about the way that program is written and the values they have. Anyway, I don't want to spend so much time on it. I just figured I'd get that out of my system because it's been inside me for quite some time. And it goes on, too. You know, now they've stolen a nuclear warhead, and they're going to fire a nuclear warhead someplace. Because it's so easy. This is the other thing they get wrong, is how security works. All they had to do was shoot down Air Force One and get the nuclear football and grab that football and read the book. Apparently all they needed was the book, or a couple of pages from the book. Never mind somebody could have Xeroxed that at any time, but they grabbed the book, and now that they have that, all they need is a nuclear missile, which they're able to get easily, and the world is theirs. It's fun, you know, it's escapist fare, but it's stupid. It's incredibly silly. But there are really good things on television, though, really good subversive things. You know, things like Family Guy, Arrested Development, Malcolm in the Middle, Deadwood, Carnival, Sopranos, Curb Your Enthusiasm. I mean, the list goes on. Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Things that, you know, you can see and realize this really isn't television. You know, this is something good. And, of course, documentaries and news programs from other countries. I've just gotten acquainted with a new station. Well, it's not a new station so much, but new to me, called Eurovision. Eurovision? No, Euronews, I'm sorry. And that's a news station sort of similar to BBC, except you don't ever see a news anchor. You just hear disembodied voices, but you get really good coverage. And it's an international station, meaning that it broadcasts in different languages depending on where you are. Out here, it's only available on cable. You can't get it on satellite, but you can only get it on digital cable. But look it up if you can. Euronet. I'm sorry, I keep getting the name wrong. Euronews.net. That's what it is. Maybe your cable or satellite provider can get it as well. Maybe you can get BBC World. That would be nice, too. But I doubt it. Let's see, what else? We have lots and lots of letters. And, you know, I do want to, since we can't take phone calls, I do want to read as many letters as possible because they give such widely diverse viewpoints and backgrounds. Here's one. I'm a long-time listener of your shows and reader of 2600. I just wanted to send you an email to add my support to the cause. Also, I was wondering what your thoughts on about two ideas that I had. The first is that since profanity is such an abstract concept and the vernacular is always evolving, do you think that it would be possible to start a campaign to assign a profane meaning to the common right-wing word or phrase, to a common right-wing word or phrase, in an attempt to start another campaign to ban the use of the word or phrase? It would be amusing. Yeah, that's sort of what I was theorizing about before. What word would you use? Religion. Don't be religious. Now, that might be hard to do, but, you know, you could convey the same meaning. Yeah, words are weird. Language is weird. It should be allowed to be weird and to develop on its own without all these people looking over your shoulder. Continuing, also with the recent court losses concerning internet media as media, it will be increasingly more dangerous for insiders to reveal information to bloggers and indie media organizations. I was thinking that someone should create an organization where people could give insider info and have some credibility, but remain anonymous. For instance, say you have a list of credible internet security people. When one of them wants to make a news submission, they log into an internet security portion of the website and submit the story without any identifiers attached. The website would not keep records of who sent what message, just that the message came from someone within the Internet Security Group. While people could subpoena the list of credible people, they could not determine who actually submitted the story, and Fifth Amendment rights would protect the people from having to admit that they were the source. It would provide a measure of credibility and protection for the sources, just an idea. Good idea. In fact, indie media does something very similar to that, where they have an open news wire, and they don't keep records. They don't keep logs. They don't log your IP. So if you post something to one of the indiemedia.org sites, your post will appear, but nobody will be able to tell who you were, unless somebody's logging you on your end. Now, this doesn't stop the authorities from trying to get the information anyway. We had a case in New York recently where Indie Media in New York City was subpoenaed in order to find out who posted a particular piece. I think it was before the Republican convention. And, of course, you know, all that they could be told was that this this information is not kept on the server, period. You can't get it. It doesn't exist. But it didn't stop them from harassing people anyway. And last year, of course, we had the case where Indie Media servers in Europe were seized by mysterious law enforcement entities, again, trying to find out the identity of somebody who posted. It's a great idea to be able to post anonymously. The problem Indie Media has is that when anybody can post, all kinds of misinformation can get out there as well onto the newswire. And it does bring down the credibility a bit. So you need some way of either editing that. I know that word is loathed to many people who believe in freedom of speech, but if you want to present factual accountings, you can't just have every ranting out there with no basis in fact. You need a way of verifying that, yes, in fact, this is true, this is happening. Failing that, then yes, something like what this particular listener suggested. People who are credible, who can say, yes, this is true. But you don't know who they are. It's kind of dangerous, though, if they start spreading misinformation. But I don't think it's any more dangerous than what we have right now. Anyhow, keep up the good fight. I look forward to the spring issue. And Redbird's Magstripe Reader, signed Erythid. Thank you very much for that letter. And yes, that article is in the spring issue, which will be coming out very shortly. Dear Emmanuel, I just heard your show over the Internet and just wanted to let you know people are listening, and even scarier, they are thinking. I've been a long time off the hook listener, but just recently started to hear Off the Wall. It's great. Don't stop. Signed, Eric. Thank you very much for that letter as well. Dear Off the Wall, I am only 15. I know that I cannot do much. Oh, that's not true. You can do a hell of a lot if you're 15. You can do a hell of a lot if you're 10 or if you're 90. Look, the guy's a pope. He's 78. You know, there's a lot you can do. And just because Indiana thinks you're not capable of appreciating things, we don't feel that way here. Anyway, I am willing to offer my help. I'm a dedicated listener to both Off the Wall and Off the Hook. I believe that every little bit will help. What can I do? I envy the way you look at things. In fact, recently your comments about Terry Schiavo helped in a classroom discussion. The teacher even praised me for the comments. Maybe people are willing to listen. I'm not sure what that means. Or maybe people are willing to listen, and you just said it twice. Yeah, it must be it. I guess we may never know. Back to the subject, where should people start? What should people do? How can people help the radio waves? Well, that's what we're going to be getting into next. Once we have a bunch of people, a good number of people, and I picked 1,000, not 1,000, I should pick 1,000, shouldn't I? No, I picked 100, because I figure that's a good base to start with. But I'm open to suggestion as to what the best way to proceed is. I'm thinking, you know, all kinds of ways of publicizing things, possibly demonstrating in various ways, letter-writing campaigns. But I prefer individual letter-writing campaigns rather than simply signing the same form letter over and over and over again. Of course, you get more that way, and as you can see, the FCC seems to actually take that seriously when it comes from conservative groups. I don't like to play those games, but it might be necessary. And we'll need to do things like start a website, get other people to come on board, figure out ways of reaching more people. If we have 100 people and everybody is able to get 10 people, it might sound like a lot, but it's not, then we have 1,000 people. And then if the same thing keeps on, before you know it, we have tens of thousands. I mean, I know we already do have tens of thousands. They're out there. It's just a question of becoming organized. And I think the secret to becoming organized and staying organized is to focus on this one issue. You know, we discuss guns, we discuss all kinds of other, we discuss war, we discuss Bush, elections, you know, foreign policy, that kind of thing. And not even close to everybody agrees on these things. So that's not a part of it, you know? We don't make it so that we want to fight the FCC and impose gun control. Now, you know, while I may support gun control, it's got nothing to do with this battle. And if you disagree with me on one thing, that shouldn't affect if you do agree with me on something else, and vice versa. So that's why it's important. And I think that's the problem too many organizations fall into. You know, anti-war demonstrations, you go to that and you hear something that really doesn't have anything to do with anything. I mean, yeah, it's all related. I know it's all related. But if I'm going to an anti-war rally, I don't want to hear about freeing Mumia Abu-Jamal. You know, it's got nothing to do with the immediate issue. Yes, it's related, oppression and all that kind of thing, I know. But you're going to wind up pushing a lot of people away that you really should have on your side, people who want to stop the war, but may think he's guilty. People who want to stop the war who may support abortion. People who want to stop the war who may support Israel. You know, there's all kinds of possibilities. The important thing is not to fracture your coalition, to focus on that one issue. I think we'd have a lot more people fighting the war now if it had stayed focused. As it is, boy, I don't know. I don't know where it's going. Tony Blair's going to win the election. It's official. Next month, he's going to win. Because so many people don't want to vote to see the conservatives in power, that and the liberal Democrats are not nearly strong enough. If they were, they'd be the perfect organization to get him out of power. This guy, Charles Kennedy, I believe is his name, staunchly anti-war, but just not powerful enough to be a real threat to Blair and the Labour Party. So we're probably going to get Blair again in England. And that's going to mean that the war has been accepted by the British people. Of course, it hasn't been. Most people are against the war. But it's the same basic conflict that we have here, voting for the lesser of two evils. A couple more letters. And again, our email address, otw@2600.com. You have my voice in fighting the FCC. Like many others, I've wanted to do something but haven't had a good place to start or just don't know where to start. After you mentioned the new chairman using South Park as an example to go after cable shows, I wanted to see how much the S-word episode would have to pay if they went after cable shows and charged them retroactively. They said the S-word 162 times that night, so the maximum fine would be $81 million. O.J. Simpson only had to pay $33.5 million. How's that for good old-fashioned, God-fearing American logic? Signed, Keith. It's insane. It really is. And, you know, we only have to look to other countries. Canada, for instance, has no problem airing things with nudity, with foul language, at certain times when children aren't likely to be listening. But you know what? If they are, they're going to hear the same words in other places. That's not the main issue. And Canadians seem to be pretty well adjusted, right? There's a cartoon called Kevin Spencer. We don't get it down here. I guess we're not allowed to see it. But I get Canadian TV, so I can see that. And they use all kinds of language in that cartoon. It's even less or more low-tech than South Park. The characters don't move at all. If you're coming down the stairs, they just sort of move the character closer and closer to you. And there's no... I guess there's no real motion in South Park either, but somehow this cartoon is even less motion. Very low budget. But they have all kinds of interesting dialogue, and it shows on their comedy channel. Without any problem whatsoever. Dear Off the Wall, I've been listening to Off the Hook for many years. I purchased 2600 magazines, took them to places just to get responses. I used them to start conversations. No matter how many times people told me the magazine was illegal or that I was in violation of rules or laws, I merely reminded them it was opinion protected under free speech. I wouldn't fight, I'd try to educate. It's been 15 years now, and I'm still doing the same thing. I correct them, let them know the facts of the matter, and remind them of the freedoms we have. I'm ex-military, and I'm currently a deputy sheriff. Wow. We had a letter from a deacon a couple of weeks ago, now a deputy sheriff. That's pretty cool. I believe in freedom of speech as the most sacred, fundamental, required right in a free society. I'm an amateur radio operator. I'm going to be following the crowd and starting a podcast. I'd like to understand exactly what it is that your position is as far as broadcasting goes. I've only heard your most recent off the wall. I'd like to be numbered among the 100 letters you need. I'll support you in this one item, as I disagree with you on other items, but those will be other letters. That's exactly the point. But I do want to understand your position. I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Signed, Everett. Thank you, Everett, for that kind letter. We won't be asking you to go to your death to defend us, but we'll be spelling out the position here as clearly as we possibly can, I think. And hopefully you'll be on board. Okay, two more letters, and we're out of time. In today's society, most people are of the impression that if they do not proactively strive for change, things will remain the same. That's bad enough, but the real danger is that things will not remain static, but will indeed change, most often in directions that few truly want, such is the case with the FCC. For any change to be made, we must act to the last person and make sure that our voices are as loud, or preferably louder, than those of the quote-unquote pro-family groups and any others who seek not only to deny our right to create and to listen to programming, but even our rights to decide what we want to hear and see. This breach of all of our rights must not be allowed to stand. I have included contact information for the FCC that is available on their website, which basically you can find just by going to www.fcc.gov. The chairman is Kevin J. Martin. His email address, which I doubt he reads, is kjmweb@fcc.gov. If you want to complain about something, then you can complain about all kinds of things. You know, people think complaining to the FCC only has to do with hearing a bad word. No, complain about what they're doing. Complain about what you hear that is hypocritical. Complain about mundane things. Complain about censorship. All kinds of things you can complain about. But the address for that is fccinfo@fcc.gov. It's funny how the complaint line is really info, but that's what they say. I guess it's also information. fccinfo@fcc.gov. As always, keep informing, keep fighting. Signed, Impure Client. Thanks very much for that piece of mail. And here's our last letter for the night. We have many more, but we can only read so many in one night. I am the former student director of WCDE, Davison Elkins College Radio in Elkins, West Virginia. I've watched helplessly as the rights of small broadcasting stations all over the country have been eroded away by the FCC. Our station runs on an extremely tight budget. We have a board older than me, and there's no way we could afford a delay system. I also used to invite people to call into my shows and express their opinions. Sometimes we had to cut the call off because of swearing. Also, I dealt with a number of student DJs who were just learning to do radio. Many of them goofed up and said a swear word once or twice. It is ridiculous to think that a small college station could possibly prevent any indecent word or subject matter from being broadcast. It is also ridiculous to think that our station could possibly have paid the fines for such a mistake. We try the best we can, suspending shows which regularly cause complaints, but there's only so much we can do. Actually, I wouldn't even go that far. Shows that are worthy of complaining about, but people complain about all kinds of things, you know? It's really your decision. I would gladly take part in any way I can to fight the FCC's strict and impossible rules, signed Matthew. Well, that's what we're going to do here on this program, and stay tuned for more updates. See you next week.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.